This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into Hard Drive Radio. I am delighted to be joined in the studio today by Ali, Aaron, and Adam, better known as Raven Eye. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming to see us.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Ali, let's start with you. I want to know, when was the first time you picked up a guitar?
I was 12 years old. I remember there's a Hendrix advert that I heard. I'm like, okay, I want to learn to play guitar like this guy. It's a lot harder than I realized. But yeah, that was the first thing, and I've never really put it down since. I learned the James Bond theme tune was the first guitar lead bit I learned, and from there, you know, that's where my influences lie.
Did you learn upside down like Hendrix, or did you play it normal?
No, I played it normal. I'm not left-handed, so thanks for making me feel even worse about myself.
No worries.
How about you, Aaron?
When did I play bass? I picked up very late, actually. I think I might have been 16 in high school and wanted to be cool. I haven't succeeded yet, so...
Who picks bass up to be cool? I'm sorry.
Hey, he's up there, son. Yeah, that's me.
I think you're cool.
Oh, thanks, Paulie. I appreciate that.
How about you, Adam?
Well, the first time I picked up a guitar was a few weeks ago. I started playing drums when I was like 13, 14. And it was through like my mum's and my nan's records, like The Faces, Rod Stewart. I kind of listened to those and just got into the rhythmic side of it all. Started setting up pillows and then bought a drum kit. Yeah.
We wish you still played the pillows, to be fair.
Yeah.
Some of the cymbal pillows coming soon.
So, you know, you guys all have your instruments. Ali, I think you've been playing, you know, you've been playing for a long time. You have a couple of solo albums out that you've done.
Yeah.
At what point did you decide, like, I need to put together, like, a rock and roll band?
I think, like, I did the blues thing, the solo thing for a while. And, like, while I enjoyed being a solo person, because it was all about me, and I, you know, enjoyed that. I think I got tired of that. I think I was working with people and was represented for a long time, and while it was amazing and I had some amazing experiences, I think I just got to the point where I wanted to start again. Like I wanted to be with a band, people that I love being around, but then also not have any representation, not have, you know, any management or any agency, and just start from the beginning. And like when we first started out, we were booking all our own gigs, we called every venue up, we, you know, did whatever we could to like sleep on floors and get around, and it was a really humbling, awesome experience because we got to learn about everyone's jobs, like what's involved in booking or promoting, and like so that when we build our team, one, we know what we're capable of, so we have like, you know, oh, you're not doing this. I mean, I remember doing that while we were like, you know, and but also to appreciate the hard work that, you know, our team, we've got some wicked people with us now, and we're really grateful that, you know, they do amazing things with us, so we're stoked about that.
The DIY aspect for bands these days is always incredible to me. You know, in the old days it was never like that. You didn't know it because you couldn't do anything. Now you have the internet and you can, you know, you can look at sites and you can book your own shows, so that's a huge part of, you know, the evolving music scene. It's good to have guys doing this for you, but, you know, having that experience, do you think you could just keep doing it on your own at this point?
Yeah, I think what we like to, like, I mean, I think we've got wicked people with us that, you know, I wouldn't ever want to really consider that because, you know, we have a family with us now. Like everyone that's joined us is like family to us. Like we're really close with everyone. And, you know, we always get involved. We can't help but stick our noses in everything. And, you know, we speak to everyone all the time because we also want to, you know, find out what's going on, but also, you know, we know what's involved. We know how, you know, we get the pleasure of playing the gig. You know, that's the best thing, you know. But to like put the gig and like send the band out, and it's like, okay, there you go. And then you play the gig. And then, so we always report back because, you know, we do have that, you know, we get to play the music and that way, you know. So we always keep in touch with everyone. But
the other side as well of the internet thing is being able to speak to the people that come to our shows.
Yep.
So we, you know, every day we're on social media and we're talking to people and, you know, make some friends on Twitter, and then they come to the show and it's like we already have that relationship established. And we can kind of just build on that. So it's a beautiful thing this day and age to be a DIY kind of group and have access to everyone that wants to love us. Come in flocks.
Which should be everybody.
Yeah.
So where did the name for the band come from, Raven Eye?
For me, it was kind of a running joke actually as a solo artist. Like, I'm a massive ornithologist. Like, I love all birds. Like, I'm the first guy that's staring out the van window when I see like a bird of prey. Like, I'm like, oh, you know, what is that? And it's a buzzard. Or, you know, I know I'm obsessed with them. And the corvidae, like the ravens, rooks, crows, like all those birds are just, they always fascinated me. Like, they're super intelligent. And we really figured that was a good reflection upon us as well. So that was very suitable. And we just, yeah, I don't know, something about them. And I just really wanted something short. And, but really, it's like, I really want loads of raven paraphernalia. So, yeah, you know, let's make a cool name where we can, you know, because you get like someone knitted a raven for us. Yeah. Like, and it's so cool. Like, how do you knit a raven? I mean, and it's wicked. It's something, it comes in our van. It's a little mascot. Yeah. So, yeah, it's really cool.
And the puns are cool too.
Yeah, yeah.
All the bird puns.
Yeah, we have loads of bird puns. Yeah.
Bird puns.
So, Aaron, how did you get recruited into this?
Well, I met Ollie in Milton Keynes. I think we met at the pub and then ended up at the casino and then ended up drunk and then ended up having a good night. So yeah, it started with good times, and it has continued.
I think it's the only way to get to know an Australian is to get them drunk.
Yes,
right. And everything comes out.
So yeah, and then pretty early on we were doing the Raven, I think. So yeah, it's been about 3 years now, or maybe more.
Yeah, 3 years.
Oh wow.
It was May the 27th,
6 p.m.
And we sat down at a bar and we discussed.
Oh, wasn't it your birthday?
No, it was.
Yeah.
I don't remember much of that day though.
Yeah, that's good.
Good birthday then.
It was. For a little while, I had some really good birthdays, and they got the absinthe out. It was friends of ours went to a bar, and then they get it, and I was fine. But then all of a sudden, someone brings out one stupid drink that they think is a good idea to like drink when you're already wasted, and it's like, yeah, absinthe. And I'm like, No,
over the edge.
No.
I don't think I've ever heard a good absinthe story.
No. Yeah, right.
No. Always ends in disaster or blackout. Adam, how did you get recruited into all this?
So I think I've been in the band almost a year now, maybe.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Actually, a year now.
Yeah. I joined 7 months ago, and it was through. These guys used to host jams everywhere, like over the UK, just to earn a bit of money and, you know, jam with musicians. And I kind of knew Ollie and Aaron anyway from Milton Keynes. I live quite close to them. I was like, I'll go down for a couple of, this is Sunday, isn't it?
A couple of absinthes.
I know they drink absinthes. I go down for a couple of songs. I'm not doing anything on a Sunday. So I go down and just, I think it was a Foo Fighters song we played or something.
Yep.
And there's cymbals flying everywhere, sticks flying everywhere at this little pub in Hemel Hempstead, my hometown. So, and then after that, I kind of stayed in contact. And then a year later, I got in contact with Ollie and just said, you know, I'm not going to let anyone else be a drummer apart from me. And he was like, all right, you need to prove it. You know, send me all these songs. And, you know, I haven't really looked back since. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I met Aaron at a casino.
We should add, though, the cymbals on the floor thing is, that's literal. We played that song. I think we played Times Like These.
Yeah.
And the two cymbals landed on the ground, came off their hooks.
One on my lap.
Landed on the ground. Yeah. And it's just still going, and we just, like, there's no way to forget that.
Yeah, the drummer was crying because his gear was getting wrecked.
Yeah.
This is because the cymbals were flying off everywhere.
I remember he was like, I'll give you the cracked ones next time.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. I would say, like, you know, I got to watch you guys play last night. You're an amazing live band, but your drumming in particular, I like, you beat the hell out of your kid, man.
He's an angry guy. He's really angry.
You got to let me out of the cage once in a while.
He has a delicate, soft radio voice, but on drums.
Animal. Yeah, animalistic.
Yeah. Nice.
Aaron and Ollie, do you remember your first, you know, live gig as a band?
Yeah, it was in, it was Spain. The Blues Cars. Yeah, I'm saying yes, but I can't even say it. Blizz cars. I do remember it, and I remember we had a. I think that's when you kind of realize, like, okay, this could work, because I think when you join a band, you realize that you're not getting paid, and you know that's a different thing than being a session guy. So like, that's the kind of the look of like knowledge of like, all right, we're in a band together. That means like, yeah, we're going to be sleeping on a lot of floors together, and you know,
let's take as much of the rider as we can.
Yeah, with that band, and yeah, that was the first gig, and. I think we all got along. Like, I think it's such a... The only way a band like this is ever going to work when there's three guys, you've got to really like each other and really get along. And we're still trying to figure that out at the moment. And, you know, it could be...
Well, I think the other thing about that gig was you know, people still knew you as a blues guy.
Yeah.
And that was the first show where it was kind of like, the blues people were kind of like, this is a little heavy for me. But then all the people at the back were like, oh, this is heavy for me.
Yeah,
everyone
yeah.
came to the front, and it was kind of like this, almost this, the floodgates kind of opened.
We shouldn't have done
that. Was the start.
We shouldn't have done that, because the promoter booked an Ollie Brown blues gig, and I was like, I'm just going to play a couple of rock songs. And yeah, he
slammed it.
He was not that happy with me. I got a slap on the wrist.
Oh, it happens. But, you know, you gotta pay the price to develop as an artist.
And mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah.
So the debut album is Nova. It is out now.
Yeah.
Tell me, you know, where did you guys record it?
Well, we recorded in Hoboken, actually. So we were staying there last night.
Yeah.
Hanging out with the producer, Warren Riker.
Water Music is the studio.
Oh, I did not say that. Sorry. Water Music, of course. Yeah, I mean, we recorded last year. We had a good month in the studio, so we were just working our asses off every day. What was it like? We're pulling 18-hour days for a month to get this thing.
We ruined ourselves doing it, but it was great.
Like it was incredible.
At one point, I sang too hard, and then I couldn't sing. And we're like, oh, this is bad. I got really carried away. It was hate, actually. I did it. I'll never forgive hate for that, because and Warren for that, because their point, like, the chorus is like, hate, see? And we're like, oh, yeah, let's get 10 of them just screaming to the microphone. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to scream hate loads of times. And all of a sudden, like, I finished the session, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great, guys. I completely forgot that I have to sing a whole album still. So, yeah, that was it.
What made you choose a studio in the US as opposed to doing it in the UK?
We were already on tour. Like, we finished a show with The Darkness. We were in The Darkness in the US, and it kind of made sense. There was no other person we were going to have produce it other than Riker. Riker is, like I said, like family. We built our family. We want to stay with our family, and he gets this band better than we do, and you know, in some essences, like in representing it for the sound. And he mentioned about Water Music, and we wanted a place that we can live in. The UK is ridiculously overpriced, and you know, it just made sense. And the room, like Water Music, like that live room for a rock band, you want a massive live room that you can turn everything up to 11 and just ruin a giant live room. And like, Riker's the guy that he puts microphones in every corner, so like we had stands going right to the corner of every room, and he'd use them, he'd find a way of making this massive sound. He's a genius, and that room is just like, all right, Warren, you do your thing with the microphones, and he did magic with it.
When you were recording, do you do the thing where, you know, you do each track separately, like you do the drum tracks and then you come in and do the guitars and all that?
We sort of did a combination of a couple of things. We did a couple of tracks live, so guitars, bass, drums.
All at the same time?
In the same time, in the same room, so that we could kind of capture the vibe that, you know, I mean, you said last night you saw the show. We want to try and get that across, that kind of, like, energy that's in the live thing. But then there were also tracks that needed more, maybe, precision, or so we sort of tracked drums and maybe tracked bass and drums together, and then overlaid some guitars and made it a mammoth wall of sound. So yeah, sort of different approaches for different songs. Whatever was needed, we treated it that way.
Yep.
Do you have a way that you prefer? You like doing it all together or doing it the stripped down way?
No, it's all. I think it's all.
Depends
we
on
really
the song.
Love recording. Like,
yeah.
However, it's going to get the best result and the best sound that we want, we'll do it.
I think my favorite one was Oh My Love. Like, I think the way we recorded it, because we had like bass amps in the same room as the drums, full volume, like, and you can hear this bleeding in the drum kit and all this crazy sound. But for that song, Oh My Love, like, it's a jam vibe like that. I like that because it's committing, and I think that's the scariest thing in a record is like the drums and bass better be playing right, because yeah, and I love that vibe. I love that.
I want to get into a couple of the songs on the album. Can you tell me a little bit about what went into writing? Well, actually, let's start with Hate, because you mentioned it before. Tell me a little bit about what went into creating that song.
Regina's kind of just jamming this little riff idea, and it's like the way we write is kind of usually like the guitarist first and like some kind of structure, and then like me just singing some, and then all of a sudden, sometimes like a word comes out, we're like, oh yeah, let's use that word. And Hate really was about the kind of start of the band of, like the transition, like for me, like I transitioned, kind of started again, and a lot of people weren't that happy with me for making that decision, and they wanted it to fail, and they were quite negative about it. And you know, even some press, some guy actually on an interview managed to slag me off in a magazine. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, just spread love, like, just don't say anything. But and that was, you know, the song, like, you know, it doesn't matter how hard you break me, it's the fuel to the fire that makes me. And that's that song is like, you have no idea that the worst things you say or the more negativity you give is just more fuel to go, yeah, we're going to make this work. And, you know, and not that, you know, our defiance, our aim is to prove people wrong. You know, we do it because we love it. But it's really good to say, you know, oh, here we are having a wicked interview in America, in New York. Like, what's going on? Like, something's worked for us. And it's awesome. And that song was about defiance of like, you know what? Don't stress, you know. Forget what anyone has to say about negativity and what it's not your problem. You know, you do what you believe in, and if you believe in it and work hard for it, then you'll make it happen for yourself. And yeah, with that song, I love singing that song. I hate it because it ruined my voice, but
yeah,
I love singing that song every gig because it's just that reminder every show that like this is what we do it for. I mean, this is why we're doing it.
Tell me about the song Hero.
Yeah, Hero was another one, kind of similar vibe. About, you know, everyone sort of putting in 100% and not, you know, kind of running on the coattails of other people's effort and work. You know, we're all in this together and we want to make this as successful as possible. And yeah, that's kind of where Hero comes. And it was done in a day too. I think we sat down, we had the guitar riff, and then yep. It kind of just, we just sat down and went, all right, let's see where this goes. And then bang, the whole thing, we had the whole structure, we had all the lyrics all done in like 6 hours.
It's just about egos, like, yeah. You know, kind of you come across people and they're like, they feel like they're there and they don't listen, and like you kind of get that weird thing where they just feel like they feel like they're a hero, they feel like they're bigger than what they are, and it's like, and they treat you differently. It's like, nah, we're all the same, you know, we all go to sleep at night, that was that kind of vibe, like that kind of false sense of what they're actually really worth.
Tell me about the song Come With Me.
Come with Me was one of that, like, actually we wrote that in a van ride back where we were just like, oh, let's write some lyrics. And originally we had this big plan for like, oh, let's go some really sinister meaning. We're like, actually, we just want this song that's like, let's get it going. Let's, you know, because a lot of the songs really, we went for like deep meaning. There's so many songs that we have stories to, and we're like, we don't exhaust everyone with like, you've got to really listen to this lyric and this song. And and we're like, let's have that song that, you know, you just want to sing. It's just really simple and just a good feeling vibe. And yeah.
Well, I think the image of it, we were driving back from a gig. It was the middle of winter. We were trying to stay awake. This was almost like an exercise to stay awake.
It was a wedding we played. We just played a wedding.
Right. And so we were like, all right, let's get this image of, like, funnily enough, we're in America, but we were like, you know, top down in a car, like driving along the coast or something in the States. Like, we want a song that people can crank and just like drive proud, loud and proud, like drive down the street.
Yeah.
So that was the image we had when we started writing these lyrics. And hopefully like that kind of vibe, that, you know, rock and roll, easy, kind of fun, energetic thing comes across.
Yeah.
What kind of awesome ass wedding had you guys planned?
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't.
We do house concerts in the UK. We go to people's houses and we kind of play in their living room and we get to like hang out and eat and drink.
Those are the good ones. But the wedding was function. Like we have like our own covers band like back in the UK, and we just kind of do like, we haven't done that in a while yet because it's kind of been so busy. But like, you know, you make your pub money, you play to the play to drunks, play the covers, and you know, like, oh yeah, I love this.
Chelsea Dagger.
Yeah, so it's always good fun, you know. I love that. It's kind of, yeah, we love that vibe, yeah, as well.
That's cool.
Lastly, I want to talk about my favorite song on the album, which is Madeline. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, I love that. It's funny, the way that song came about was we wrote the whole song and it was a whole different vibe. So like, the verse is a completely different structure and it wasn't even that feel. And just, it wasn't really flowing at all in the slightest. And then just tried to kind of find some, like, I want to make this dark and get heavier riffs going on. And then the lyrics really came out easy. So the chorus is already written, and then just kind of rewrote all the lyrics for the verses. And just about that kind of, like, it was kind of more about the heat of, like, you're in the relationship with the person and, like, you're madly in love. But for some reason, that person that you're madly in love with is also the person that you can manifest the most disgusting words to when you're really furious at them. Like, the things you'd say to that person that you love is like you'd never ever say to anyone, not even when you're in the car and you're mad at someone because they like cut you up. And that's kind of what that song is about. Just like that, you know, vicious kind of cycle you can get into when you're arguing with each other. And that was like what Madeline was about.
I want to go through and see what everyone's favorite song to play live is, and start with Adam.
Hate for me.
Why?
When I joined the band, like, I was a fan beforehand, so Ollie sent me the record, and I was like, oh my god, I get to listen to Nova before anyone else does. So I was like, listen to it back to front, and that was the one that stood out for me, because I mean, I come from quite like a heavy background music wise, so that riff was, it's great. Everyone loses it, and it doesn't matter if you're having a good show or a bad show, like everyone loses themselves at that point where it's just that riff comes in. And it's just straight up, like drum wise, just simple rock and roll drums. Yeah. Hey,
Aaron?
Yeah, I love playing Madeline. Yeah, well, there's a really fun harmony on the chorus that I get to sing, and obviously the riff's pretty fat. So, yeah, I'm cool with that, kicking in my double amp setup. It's fun. Yeah, Madeline.
What for me, like right now, because I haven't played it for a while, I just want to feel you. I love that for like, I don't know, that monotonous kind of just trippy vibe, and then like this, like going off in the solo, like I kind of like channel my
inner Hendrix. 5-minute guitar solo have anything
that's
to do
definitely
with
has,
it?
Okay, that definitely it. Has everything to do with it.
The only thing.
I want to know whose idea was it for Ollie to climb on Aaron's shoulders.
Oh yeah, it's like our party trick, isn't it? No, I think we were in Spain, and yeah. we were just kind of, I think we saw like some kid on like her dad's shoulder or something, and we were like, oh man, we should do that in the show. And he was like, let's see if we can do it. So he like kind of jumped on my shoulders, and I walked around with him for a bit, and we're walking around town like idiots. And then we're like, hold on, we could do this with guitars. Yeah. So then we just tried it, and it worked, and it was like, let's put it in the show, you know? And so now it's like, it's great to still get that reaction when he jumps up on the shoulders and we're playing, you know? I mean, it hails back to the AC/DC thing.
Yeah.
People still kind of go, holy, wow, that guy's on the, and he's playing the guitar. And
oh,
it's like,
my.
Wow, you know? It's really cool to get that reaction out of people. And I mean, last night we just did it in the crowd, and people are, you know,
and
it's
the first show we did in the US tour, the tower was conquered, and I almost face planted onto the floor.
Yeah.
It was bad, man. Like, luckily, some people at the front were like, they put their hands out, like, cupping my face. Yeah. And it only clicked to me like the other day. I was telling someone, I'm like, oh, the only reason I almost face planted is because I was too busy playing guitar. I'm like, no, I want to keep going. If I just put my hands out, I would have been perfectly safe and could have dismounted really easily. But I was like, I'm ripping a guitar, so I'm like, no way am I stopping this. I'll lose my nose first.
Show must go on, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've still got
the bruised knee.
I got to say, you know, I've seen a lot of shows in that little room down there in Webster, and it wasn't the biggest crowd, but it was definitely like the most excited crowd I've ever seen. Like, everyone there was really having a great time, a great freaking time.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say, anybody listening to this interview, if you get a chance to see Raven Eye live, do it. Go see them, because it's just a phenomenal experience. You guys really kill it. I mean, at one point, I think Adam was like just slapping his drums. Like, he didn't even have sticks in his hands.
I ran out.
You were swinging off the pole as well. You climbed the thing. It was like swinging off the
rafters. I always try, if we're in really small gigs, I try and find stuff to like swing off, like monkey style.
Monkey style.
Yeah. So you guys have done some pretty killer tours already. I mean, you toured with Kiss in Europe, and I think you're doing some shows with Shinedown here, and I think you guys played with Hailstorm, and like what has been your favorite, you know, touring experience with these bands so far?
For me, I think we recently did an Aerosmith show in Lisbon. We'd never been to Portugal before, and we'd never supported Aerosmith either, so that one was nuts. The crowd was insane. They were just so into it, and you know, we sort of had the podium. I don't know if you've seen their shows lately on their last tour, but they have this huge catwalk. That's sorry. And so we're using that, and we're doing the shoulders thing on the thing, and we got the wireless, and we're out in the crowd. Man, it was such a fun show.
Yeah. I think the cool thing about that was you support loads of bands, and big or small, and the crowd's like either like half into it or fully into it. And the Lisbon show, every single person in that room, 25,000 people, just got up off their feet, and you can see people even sitting down, and I was pointing at people and they were just getting up and you're having a good time. There's a guy at the front with a banner like "Long Live Rock and Roll," and we were just like, this is feels like home. It was like
and
electric.
Aerosmith sounded amazing.
Yeah,
they are killing it at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, they just sound so good.
Yeah,
I'm amazed that they still sound so good, you know, after all the drugs and shit that they did. I saw them, I think I saw them a year ago at the Prudential Center in New Jersey, and it was just awesome.
Oh, man, so good. I blew our minds how good they were. Like, they played Fleetwood Mac, oh well, like old school Peter Green Fleetwood Mac, and they just ripped it so hard. Yeah, like, I'm a massive old school Fleetwood Mac fan. Like, and actually, I was thinking about them today as well. So hearing that, like, and hearing a band rip it up, like, there was just this massive jam moment, and the guys were going for it. And I just, oh man, it just was so real. It was so real.
And I think actually that same show, Slash was, you know, the direct support with Miles Kennedy. And,
nice.
Like, I love him too.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
They're
That's a great lineup.
They are a great band, man.
They are a great band.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were very lucky. We got to go out with them as well. We went through the States. We did two tours in Europe as well with them. And again, like, well, actually, funny story. Yesterday, when we were in Cleveland, I kind of ripped my bass apart and it kind of broke. So we had an overnight drive to New York City, and I kind of had to hook up a way to fix my bass. So I got in touch with the guitar tech that was on the Slash tour, who lives in New York. And he's not here at the moment, but he put me in touch with the guitar place and fixed my guitar. So it's amazing, like, the family that we met with the Slash crew and all the band and the crew guys, still, you know, 3 years later, are looking after us. And we get to see them. I think last tour we were in Vegas, and we hooked up with the guys. And it's just such a beautiful thing, like, building this family continually through touring. And just to realize that these guys, whilst they're these, you know, some of the biggest rock bands in the world, they're some of the coolest guys in the world, you know? You know, we're able to look them up and they help us out. It's a beautiful thing. We love it.
Yeah.
I'd say I'm very fortunate that, you know, in the years, I've only been doing this job for maybe like four and a half years, but I've been very fortunate in that I think I've only met like two people who are actual assholes.
Sorry about that, mate. Yeah.
Double it today.
Yeah.
So there's always these great stories on the road, but sometimes there's like the real like shit show stories too. You know, we call them the Spinal Tappian moments.
There's a lot of them.
You get, you know, left behind at a truck stop, or, you know, you can't find your way to the stage or something like that. So I want to know, like, besides almost face planting in front of everyone, what's like the worst thing that's happened to you guys on the road?
It's gotta be the van.
Yeah, man. We're pretty good at our fuel situation, but some reason the sat nav, we're in like Romania going across these didn't know we were going to cross the mountains, but turns out we did, and the fuel was low. And we're like, there'll be a fuel stop, it's all right. But of course, we're in the middle of Romania going through some mountain range, and we're going uphill for a really long time. And all of a sudden, the meter, we're still climbing, and the meter's going blank. And we were getting really scared. Like, we were white knuckling it. And we actually even wrote a whole story about it as well on Facebook, because we were terrified. We got to one point, and then there was like this freaky monastery, but it had lights on. We're like, look, we're not going to make it. We need to, like, you know, sanctuary, and, you know, knock on the door and like, can you help us? So we knock on the door, like, nothing's happening. And then we realize we're on the top of a mountain. It's freezing cold. Like, it was summer, and we're like, colder. Like, when this van's out, guys, like, you know, we're going to be freezing. So we struggled even actually, like, oh, we struggled even getting up the hill. Some guys,
it was like something out of Deliverance. We were scared.
Oh,
we were
actually
scared, and because we were going up a hill, the fuel, we were so low in fuel that the fuel would like go back in the tank, and so the gauge would say it's empty, and then we'd sort of go on a flat and it would even out.
We'd go neutral, and then for like about 2 hours we just were in neutral, just
going
coasting down a hill, praying that we were going to make it. And then we actually, when we got to the fuel station, we were, I think I got a video on my phone as well, like screaming like, yeah, like just the best feeling
we're
ever. I really thought, like, I just thought it was just, there was nothing we could do. Cause some guy, like, we actually like flagged some guy down. We're like, hey, fuel, do you know any fuel places, mate? And of course, like, he's like, I don't know what on earth you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, I live in the mountains in Romania. I don't speak any word of English. And yeah, that was mortifying. Like, we're pretty good at fuel, but that was definitely one of the scariest moments, because I don't want to, you know, that's like beginning of a horror movie. Three lads break down in the van in a mountain range that no one's at.
The abandoned monastery.
the abandoned monastery.
And the cool thing too is, like, at the top of the mountain, it was the top of a mountain. We could see everywhere. It was the most beautiful picture, but we were all so stressed.
We were so miserable.
So stressed that we were like, let's just get down the hill.
We got a picture of it.
Man.
We did get a picture of it, and like, oh, we looked at the picture like, oh, wow. Okay, yeah, that was really beautiful. But we were like, well, we need to go. everyone's stressed and like white knuckling it. Oh, yeah, that was hilarious. Terrifying.
And here I thought you were going to tell me the Russia story.
The Russia story, yeah? Our gear?
Yeah. We got
we have very bad luck flying to Russia.
Yeah. Loads of our luggage, like, considering we're a band that's, you know, named after birds that flying, we have the worst luck with flying. Luggage gets lost all the time with us. It's just part of our life. Like the first show we did, like with Slash in Oslo, I had a miserable cold, and all our luggage got lost, and we had the show the next day, and like, this is the first show we're playing with Slash, like, we're like, this is the biggest thing we've ever had, so we're like, this is the worst thing ever. My voice went, I couldn't speak. So then our manager Andy, just sent this massive email to the airlines, got every airline, everyone looking for the bag.
I think he CC'd every director of every.
But then I still couldn't sing, so then he's arranging like a guy that's called like the Rock Doctor. He was doing like, he went on tour with Rolling Stones, like just on the side, like just as a, having a, someone as a doctor around. And of course, I had to go into his house, and he's like, "Oh, I'm going to inject you in the butt," and I'm like, "Yeah, it's funny." And he's like, "No, for real." I'm like, "Okay, great." So I had to pull my pants down in the bathroom, and then he just stuck a needle in my butt, and then, you know, gave me some like steroids and stuff for my nose. I'm like lying down, like this is crazy, and it actually worked. Like for the gig, I managed to sing just for the gig, just about, and then like straight afterwards, my voice was like, like just gone. But that was we don't do well with flying. So when we can drive, we tend to drive or take a really bad ferry. Yeah. Like there's some really dodgy ferries from like the UK going across seas that like I managed to have a butterfly in my salad. Like I stabbed a live butterfly. Like, how on earth is there a butterfly in a salad? I know, right? Like in a salad, I felt wrong because I'm a vegan. So I'm like, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing by having a salad, you know, no cruelty and stuff like that. And here I am just shoving forks and butterflies, like, you know.
It's a cruel world.
Equilibrium.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the solution would be just to keep you here in the States so you don't have to fly.
That's a good idea.
We really want to.
Let's go with that.
This is not your first U.S. tour. Of the places you played in the U.S., what has been your favorite?
It's going to be really cliche.
Yeah.
Last night.
Yeah. Dude, New York, like when we played to the Darkness in Irving Plaza, the crowd were just lit. Like it was, we thought it was going to be quite a reserve crowd because like we figured like New York's like not easily impressed. And like so we just kind of went a bit harder and like there was a wicked vibe at Irving Plaza. But last night, like I said, like, you know, it was this kind of, you know, a limited crowd, but everyone was just like, and for us, everyone's into it. So like, and the wilder the crowd get, the wilder things get with on stage. And then I start talking too much and then, you know, things start happening. And it's like this natural energy that, I love those shows. Those are the moments that you live for as a band, that you connect with an audience this way, that like we're all in this together and like what happens happens. And it was one of the best gigs of my life. Like I had such an amazing time with just this wicked bunch of people that just wanted to have a good time on a, you know, on a Monday night.
Yeah, Monday night in New York. Although we should give a shout out to maybe like Salt Lake City was really fun.
Yes.
Some of the Texas shows were great. I mean, to be fair, U.S. audiences are pretty fun. Everyone's up for a party, like Monday night, right? Like, we love being over here. It's great to tour in the States.
I'm so glad to hear that because New York is a hard city to play sometimes. You know, it's a city full of cynical people, and they've seen it all. They've done it all already. Yeah. So whenever a band comes around, you know, sometimes I feel like I have to apologize on behalf of the city. Like, no, they liked you. They just, sitting there with their arms folded means they liked you.
We have not had that experience at all in New York. We've been really lucky.
You know why? I think it's because we're British and we're really sarcastic and everyone kind of digs that in New York. Like, oh, right. Yeah. If you come into New York, like, how's it going? Like, we're raving on.
Usually, like, everyone in America is just like so kind to us. Like, when we play our shows, like, you know, sometimes I feel like it's not quite working. I put on a bit more English accents, like, oh, hello, everyone. We're from England.
Or is it we were playing Cleveland? It was like, hello, if you haven't guessed already, we're from Britain. And everyone was like,
way! So occasionally you pull out like the Brit card, like, you know, and you feel like, oh, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, they're all right there, you know. Because we sing like Americans and then we talk like British people. Well, he talks like an Australian, but.
Sorry about that.
Sounds the same to everyone, really.
Sorry, not sorry.
Got to work on that. Yeah. The album is Nova. The band is Rave and I. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in to see us. This was a blast.
Cheers, Paul. Thanks so much, mate. Appreciate it.
If you want to check us out, like we said sort of earlier, we do handle all the social media. So if you want to speak to us, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, our website, it's /itsRaveandI. That's the handle. And you'll be talking to us. So yeah, get in touch.
Sure, you guys are really good with the videos.
Oh, yeah?
Thanks,
you like the videos?
Oh,
I do. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's so much fun to kind of give the kooky side of us on the road and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, we decided, like, we're trying to figure out, like, are we rock stars where we pretend like we don't care and wear sunglasses inside everywhere? And we're like, no, we're idiots. Like, we should probably just do, like, yeah. You can't see Adam. He's looking like an idiot right now. We're so cool, dude.
So, yeah, man, thanks so much for having
us.
Yeah,
thank you.
Awesome. Absolutely. All right.
This is Hard Drive DL. Check out more. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app or visit harddriveradio.com.